me about your personal recollections of that engagement.
Now, you must recall that the engineering department's only duty was to propel the ship at a speed required by the captain when on the bridge or the officer of the bridge, officer of the watch, when a more senior officer was not there. The captain told the engine room what was required of it under any conditions when at sea. The commander-in-chief before the, the commandery before the ship went to sea personally went to the bridge to report to the captain, engine room department, ready to proceed to sea. From that time onwards, the captain had the engine room department completely under his command, which was passed to the controlling engine room by voice pipe, telephone, or ship's broadcast. The engineer officer of the watch obeyed the instructions and passed them, as required, to the other engine room compartments. So, when the chase of the Scharnhorst became apparent, first to the Admiral, through the Commander-in-Chief, and then through the Admiral, the Captain, and to the heads of all departments, we are in pursuit of the Scharnhorst.
Do you remember those communications?
Only those which came through the ship's broadcasting system. You have to remember that the senior officer of my department was the Commander E. In any state of action or readiness, his position was in the foremost engine room. My duty and position as a senior engineer was in the after engine room, there being two engine rooms. So any orders from the bridge were passed directly to the Commander E, who then, if required, passed them to me by internal telephone to the after engine room.
And what were your particular instructions during the pursuit of the Scharnhorst?
From the beginning to the very end of the Scharnhorst, our duty was to pursue the Scharnhorst at maximum speed. The Scharnhorst was faster, so in order to have any chance of keeping up with it, Belfast had to go as fast as it possibly could. We maintained full power for, as far as I remember, 17 hours. Now that's like driving a motor car around a racetrack with your foot hard down on the pedal for without stop for 17 hours.
During this situation, was the watch system still
no.
in place? Everybody just...
We were at action stations. You didn't budge from your action stations until the next degree of readiness was ordered by the captain.
So you were... All of you were on duty for all of that time?
Everybody was on duty for that length of time. Even the chaplain had a place of duty during action. with the medical team.
So everything was kept running for 17 hours?
At full speed. Because you must appreciate that it's not only the main engines, the turbines, that have to go at full speed. Everything which is applicable to driving the turbines also has to go at full speed. So the boilers are at their maximum capacity.
Were you aware of the shelling or any the use of the guns and torpedoes?
Anything which made a sound above the normal steaming sounds was audible to everybody in the engine room department, which had loudspeakers operated from the bridge. In other words, we were kept informed, insofar as the command could allow it, of what was happening. But in order to do that, in the engine rooms, which were very noisy, as you can imagine, the hum of machinery required somebody to apply an ear to the loudspeaker. So, at any crackle from the loudspeaker indicating that it had been switched on, somebody from the engine room personnel had to go and put his ear and listen closely to whatever was said. And then everybody would gather around and say, what did he say?
What was the atmosphere like?
Tense, because you knew that the ship was engaged in following the enemy, that when conditions allowed, when we got near enough to the enemy, we were going to fire at it, that we were going to be actually intent upon sinking the enemy, there was a degree of tenseness. Now you were about to do the job for which you were employed. Sink the enemy. Now, this meant for a small degree of nervousness. After all, you were like somebody starting to win the 100 yards in the Olympics. Not an ordinary 100 yard sports day race. You were like Olympic runners.
Whilst you were at action stations, I mean, was there somebody who was providing food for everybody? How did you deal with the normal everyday parts of life? Did you receive any food when you were...
Oh, yes. Yes. When action stations were sounded, anybody with any common sense took down a drink of some sort, or if he had it, any food, notably any chocolate he happened to have. But then arrangements were made, even during action stations, if they were prolonged enough, to provide those at action stations with some form of, if I call it picnic lunch, it would be sandwiches. And somebody would be detailed in each multi-manned space to go to the galley and fetch whatever was allocated. Previous arrangements would have been made. The galley would have been informed how many people would be in the after engine room when at action stations. But of course, it was only very rarely that you remained at an action station long enough to make the captain consider it was time for somebody to have a sandwich.
That's why I asked, because in this case you were there for 17
In this
hours.
Case we were there for, my guess would be 19 hours, because the pursuit of the Charnels, where the Belfast was concerned, was for about 17 hours. But first the ship had to get to a position where it could follow the movements of the Charnels on the radar, and then, subsequent to the sinking of the Charnels, we had to remain at action stations in case some other element of the enemy, submarine, aircraft, another kind of warship, would have been able to take action about the then assembled combined fleets of the home fleet and the Mediterranean fleet.
Were you aware of the final engagement with the Scharnhorst?
Oh, very much. Very much. If they had fired a pea shooter on the upper deck, we would have been aware of it.
And what was the reaction in the engine room when you heard that the Scharnhorst had been sunk?
Very tense. Not obvious. Nobody showed any apprehension. After all, this was the job for which we trained, in some cases, for 20 years. This was it. This was it. You now relied upon the skill of the gunners to sink the enemy before he sunk you. So this was where interdepartmental cooperation was seen at its most intense. We got the gunners to the position they desired as fast as we could.
Did you actually witness the ship going down?
No. No, we remained at action stations for at least 2 hours after the Charnels was sunk.
Was the Belfast involved in trying to...
Very much indeed.
Was the Belfast involved in trying to recover any survivors from the Charnels?
No. No, you must remember that even though we were at action, waiting, some of those on the upper deck watching the Charnels sink beneath the waves, there was still a very strong an action station possibility of being attacked by the enemy. Though concentrated upon the Charnels, there were German submarines lurking.
So from what you've said, there weren't any celebrations, there was no particular jubilation. From what you've said, there doesn't appear to have been any celebration when the Scharnhorst was sunk.
And not in my engine room. Relief. But I don't recall anybody actually cheering or waving their arms. Yes, they must. Human nature would have required every individual to have done something.
I'm just asking.
A little bit like cheering a football team.
Just asking for what you remember, what you actually heard and saw.
I was so overcome with pity. For those Germans swimming about in oil fuel, that I had no other feeling than pity, not for several minutes. My pity was evoked by two things. First, a declaration over the loudspeaker. We have sunk the Scharnhorst. And much more, hard to describe, a much more human feeling that down the ventilation tubes came the smell of oil fuel. Now, this was absolutely unmistakable. Oil fuel has a very pungent and disagreeable smell. Now, the Scharnhorst, whilst sinking, discharged hundreds of tons of fuel upon the surface of the sea, and the smell from that came down as if we ourselves were in the sea. And it took no imagination that if they were survivors, they were swimming in oil fuel. That was my only thought for quite some time, I think. I don't think I felt like cheering. The job had been accomplished. Now, here is a remarkable thing. The Royal Navy does not kill other sailors. It sinks enemy ships. Its purpose is not to kill the enemy, but to sink its means of sinking our ships. So, I think the most hardened Royal Navy sailor has no wish to actually kill sailors from the German Navy. But he wants to sink his ship. And everything else that is concerned with sinking the ship, the explosions, the gunfire, the torpedoes that sink the ship, and with it sink other engineers, other stokers, other gunners, is incidental to the sinking.
After the end of action stations, was there anything on board to mark the sinking of the Scharnhorst? Was there any reward for the ship's company?
And not in the time left to me in the Belfast. The reward to a stoker for some performance of bravery and duty was announced after I left the Belfast. The commanderee would have been the one to be asked by the captain if he had any recommendations to make for awards. Now, in the engine room department, there were, for the Scharnhorst section, very few opportunities for anybody in the engine room department to show bravery. In actual fact, there was only one stoker or leading stoker who was able to show personal bravery.
What I was thinking of was something that maybe the captain did to mark the extra effort that the crew had put in. I don't know, an extra tot of rum or something like that. Something from within the Belfast to show that, to mark the fact that they'd achieved this victory.
Yes. Subsequent to my departure, I beg your pardon, I'm now talking about when I left the ship. No. There were awards made, published, announced to the ship's company, and where it was applicable, the ship's company was assembled to congratulate the award. The Admiral.
What I was thinking of was more something in the immediate aftermath of the sinking of the ship. Something, I don't know, as I said, that the captain did, an announcement or...
No. No. It took several weeks for recommendations for awards, honours and awards to be made, to reach the Admiralty, to be approved by His Majesty, the King, if they were of knighthoods. No, it took several weeks.
But there was nothing done on the ship?
No.
Immediately afterwards? No gathering of the
No,
crew,
an nothing. Announcement by the Admiral, followed by another announcement by the Captain, acknowledging the performance of duty by every individual in the ship, and all the departments were named. So over the broadcast came the captain's voice, approving, commending, rendering honour and verbal award to everybody in the ship. It was expressed, well done, the engine department. Bravo, the gunnery department. Your firing was accuracy to the last degree. Well done, the torpedo department. It was your department that finally sank the Charnel. Because it's a fact, the Belfast was ordered to fire torpedoes to strike the last blow and sink it.
Can I ask you, were there any...
And then, of course, they cleared lower deck when we returned to harbour, and it was then Admiral and Captain were able to talk to the entire ship's company and to reflect upon the achievement of doing what the Navy was required to do, sink the enemy.
Were there any other engagements during your time on the Arctic convoys?
Accompanying the Arctic convoys was something more intense, more dangerous, more horrific than chasing the Charnost.
Why was that?
Well, the human endeavour required to withstand the weather conditions, freezing to the very marrow of your being, exposed to the minus degrees of temperature, was so horrific, they exceeded any personal feeling of danger when you were firing at the enemy. It was an entirely different aura. It was the weather you were competing against. The weather was the enemy, not the German aircraft. They supplemented the dangers that the weather presented. You weren't frightened of attack. You were frightened of falling overboard.
Was the Belfast attacked during that time?
Oh, no. In my time in the Belfast, we were never attacked by the enemy and we never suffered any damage.
So there were no other engagements during your time with the Arctic convoy?
The on firing their guns at distant objectives, we were never engaged so close as to be damaged ourselves. So they fired many guns at distant warships, even submarines. But this would be in their day-to-day duties, sheltering convoys or attacking land installations. We fired many times at German positions, at positions in Norway. But this would be not so intense, not so dangerous as engaging a ship like the Charmoth. You see, the Charmoth could outgun us. The Charmoth could outrun us. So it was an enemy of the greatest possible kind.
How long were you escorting Arctic convoys?
Oh, several months. For the entire winter period, during which I was in the Belfast.
This would have been 1943 to 1944, the winter.
That's right. The time that's become famous in history. Everybody knows of the Arctic convoys.
Charles Simpson, Reel 15.